Good morning. My name is Tanya, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the NBPE Investor Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Peter Vanlancker. Mr. Vanlancker, you may begin.
Hello, this is Peter Vanlancker from Neuberger Berman, and welcome to the NBPE Investor Update call. I'm joined today by my colleague, Paul Daggett. The presentation we'll be using here, together with relevant disclosures, can be found on our website, www.nbprivateequitypartners.com. I should also note that unless we otherwise mention, the numbers we'll be providing today are as of May 31st, 2019. So let's turn to the presentation. On page two, you can see some of our key performance highlights. And we're very pleased with how the company is performing. On an LTM basis, our NAV per share total return in dollars was 9.2%. Our share price total return in sterling was 14.2%. We have a strong capital position with over $1 billion of private equity fair value and a 185% adjusted commitment coverage ratio. We've had very strong cash flows in the last 12 months with $262.8 million of distributions, $237.4 million of new investments, and we've paid $27.3 million in dividends to our shareholders. That's resulted in a 4.1% annualized dividend yield on share price or 3% on NAV. We've also repurchased more than 1.5 million shares at a weighted average discount of a bit north of 20%. That was $21.2 million. So on page three, you can see some of our key balance sheet figures. As mentioned, our private equity fair value is a bit over $1 billion. Our private equity investment level is 115%. Our net asset value is for the vehicle as a whole is $871.5 million or $18.43 a share. That's £14.62 in sterling. And our NAV per share, including dividends paid during the period, is $18.71. On page four, you can see a bit about our portfolio diversification. As you all know, our portfolio is predominantly direct equity investments. That's 85% of our portfolio. We have 11% in income investments, and our funds portfolio is down to only 4% of our NAV. Geographically, we remain weighted towards North America, with North America being 78% of our NAV and 17% in Europe. We also are very well diversified by industry. In terms of the vintage year diversification of the portfolio, as you can see, we're predominantly exposed to the 2015 to 2018 investments. Those are investments that we made in those years. And that means that most of our NAV is in private equity investments that are between, have been in the portfolio between 1 and 4 years. And we feel very good about that because that's typically the peak point of value creation for a private equity portfolio. And Paul will touch a bit more on that in a few minutes. You can see our NAV per share development of the last 12 months on page five. A year ago in May of 2018, our NAV per share was $17.42. We've had $1.64 of investment appreciation, 32 cents of yield income and dividends. We paid 5 cents per share in financing costs, 46 cents in expenses. We've paid out to our shareholders 56 cents in dividends. And we've had 13 cents per share of accretion from buybacks, resulting in that $18.43 per share NAV. Page six, you can see the liquidity we've been generating out of the portfolio from realizations. Very strong realizations in 2016, 17, and 18 across the portfolio, but also even year to date in 2019, very strong realization activity with $107 million of realizations from the portfolio in the first 5 months. $38 million of that came from our income investments, mostly from the realizations of our two structured preferred investments in Standard Aero and Avantor. We also had $58 million of realizations from our equity portfolio. Those came predominantly from the sales, the full exits of Standard Aero in Berlin stock sales from Assurant and Arui to listed stocks, and the recap proceeds from Staple. So now let's look at performance by investment type on page 7. You can see we've seen strong performance across time periods 1, 3, 5, and 10 year, and across our direct equity investments, income investments, and funds. We feel particularly good in the one-year basis about our direct equity portfolio, generating 11.4% return in the last 12 months, especially given, as mentioned, that has been a younger portfolio and just sort of now getting into the sweet spot. Also worth noting that our funds portfolio is down to being only 4% of NAV, but still generated a 7.1% rate of return in the last year. And that includes both on the NAV and the return basis, the results from actually having done a number of portfolio sales or having sold a number of funds from that portion of the portfolio at the end of last year. So with that, I'd now like to hand it over to Paul for a deeper dive into some of the aspects of the portfolio. Paul?
Great. Thank you, Peter. So I am on page 8, which is a summary of the direct equity portfolio. And you can see in the top left that today we have just over 100 positions with a total of $857 million of fair value. That's with 58 different general partners, so we continue to be well-diversified in our GP relationships. I will note that 20 of those positions are less than $2 million in size, mostly the result of older investments or tail ends. So there is a little bit more concentration than might appear just looking at those statistics. And there is a full listing of all of the equity investments in the back of the presentation. The numbers on the bottom left look at our revenue growth and EBITDA growth. These are from our December reports. We'll update these in our Q2 reports, which will be out in early September. But it does give you a very good idea that the portfolio continues to show very strong revenue and EBITDA growth, and we believe that's still the case. The valuation, very much in line with private equity markets and in what we think are good assets with a reasonable level of debt. And, of course, we have had some exits, as Peter mentioned, in the year with 3 full exits generating 2.3 times cash multiple on those 3 exits on average. On the right, a couple of pie charts, both of which I think are very important. First of all, 70% of our portfolio are what we call non-traditional types of co-investments. So these are co-underwrites or midlife investments that we talk about on a regular basis, but we do think this shows the differentiation we have in our relationships and in the types of investments we look for in our co-investment platform. So only 30% of those are traditional syndicated co-investments. Most of the others are particular situations where we're brought in very early in the underwriting or midlife in an investment. And again, that does show the depth of our relationships on our private equity platform. In the bottom right, again, very importantly, one of the key advantages that we have in co-investing and in MBPE as a whole today is a very low level of secondary fee and carry. So in 96% of the direct equity portfolio, we don't pay a fee or a carry to the underlying GP, which of course makes our portfolio very fee efficient, only paying that single layer of fees. Moving on to page 9, which looks at the 10 largest investments, this is $270 million, or almost a third of the direct equity portfolio. The 10 names here are actually the same 10 names as if we had in the Q4 report. They are in a different order. They've all continued to do well, but I won't go through them since I did that on the last call. I will note that, as Peter mentioned, Sycamore did recapitalize Staples during the quarter, and the fair value here doesn't reflect that cash that came back from that. So that was one of the big drivers of the performance during the year. On to page 10 and looking at new equity investments, it probably looks like we've been much slower with our investment pace, which, of course, is true. What isn't true is that we have been very busy looking at new investments, and we've been very selective. It is a competitive environment. Also, of course, we are at 115% invested, which means that we can be even more selective than we usually would with making new investments. So for those two reasons, we've made two new investments during the year. Again, both of these have been covered on prior calls, Agility in the healthcare space and then Hub in the insurance brokerage space. So again, I won't go into those, but they are two examples of the thesis that we've talked about on prior calls, which is in a competitive market, we are looking for three things. One is potentially investments which we think will show less of a peak-to-trough decline in revenue and earnings in a cycle. Two would be almost the opposite of that, a company that we think continue to grow during that because of some secular growth drivers. And the third is very high-quality general partners able to work with companies to execute a plan, both in a normal market and in the potential downturn that that will come at some point. So I think Agility and Hub both fall more on the defensive side, sector-wise, of that. There are four investments that we mention here as potential pipeline investments. Of course, we don't know if any of these will close, but these are all investments that are further along in our pipeline, and we've done a significant amount of work on. The total potential for these four investments will be just over $60 million. And again, all four very much within one of those three theses, in most cases two of them. And so we have a busy pipeline. We've continued to have a busy pipeline throughout the year. But of course, we have executed fewer new investments for the two reasons I mentioned. Moving on to 11 and the opposite, which is exit events for the most part. Once again, many of these have been covered on prior calls. It's a mixture of IPOs, recapitalizations, of sell down of public stocks, as well as full exits. There are three which we have not covered. Avantor, Peter mentioned. This was a investment we had, a midlife investment, which was completed in 2017, so very much in line with that midlife thesis that we can see some earlier liquidity. We had two different securities in this investment. In the IPO, the senior PIC preferred was refinanced, so we no longer hold that. It was repaid in full. The junior convertible preferred stock was converted to common equity at the IPO price of $14 per share. As of the close yesterday, that was trading at $18.62, and so it has traded very well so far since the IPO, and based on that is driving some of the value increase that you've seen so far during the year. Staples, we mentioned a couple of times, that was a dividend recapitalization. We still own all of the equity in the three different business units that we've talked about on prior calls. The recapitalization, of course, did return a significant amount of our invested capital, though, which is not, as I mentioned, reflected in the fair value since that's a cash return. And then the final, very final line of page 11, we did have do have a small holding in Uber. That was an investment we made in July of 2018. Of course, that IPO was a very large IPO at 45. It has traded down from that, but is getting closer. And of course, the IPO was still a step up from where we invested. And so it's one of those that we'll watch over time. It's a relatively small position. We don't make a very large number of venture or sort of early stage growth investments. We did make an exception in this case, and we still hope that that can drive some returns over time. One other event I will mention, which has been in the press in the last couple of days, is that we do have a position in PetSmart, which, as you'll have seen in the Financial Times or the Wall Street Journal, was a business that PetSmart acquired in 2017, a business called Chewy, which is really PetSmart diversifying and accelerating their online strategy. And they did that through an acquisition in 2017. They sold a portion of that in an IPO on Friday. The IPO was at $22 a share and was trading at $33.70 at the end of business yesterday. The proceeds of that were in part used to pay down debt on the company, but without giving away any confidential information, you can see from the Financial Times that the IPO was at a price that was a step up from a large step up from where Chewy was acquired in 2017, and we'll see what that does to the overall valuation of that position as of the end of Q2. Slide 12 is a slide we always include. The biggest update here is, of course, the 2.3x that we've gotten on three full exits so far in year to date. Those are Standard Aero, Warranty Group, which we sold down our Assurance stock position that was part of the acquisition proceeds, and then Berlin Packaging. And those three on average have returned 2.3 times invested capital. And you'll see on the right that the valuation uplift continues to look strong, with a 29% uplift from where we were holding a company three quarters prior to that full exit compared to where we actually sold it at the exit. So good step-ups on those exits over the last 3 years. One slide we've added from prior presentations is slide 13, and the reason we added it is we are pleased with where the value creation is coming from in the equity portfolio, and we wanted to really highlight that. First of all, I think it's well known that a lot of our portfolio has become a little bit younger because we've been very successful reinvesting proceeds from prior exits. So the average age of the portfolio at the end of the first quarter was 2.4 years in the equity portfolio. That occasionally raises questions about the age of the portfolio and how long it will be till we see exits. This slide, slide 13, shows you that of the almost $50 million of value appreciation year-to-date in our direct equity portfolio, 78% of it is coming from the last four vintage years, most notably 2017, which, again, you'll have seen from the earlier pie chart, wasn't a year where we were particularly busy. We saw a lot of investments that we felt were highly differentiated, including Staples and Q Park. Those are two of the big value drivers. But overall, we're really pleased with how the value is beginning to show through in those younger investments. And of course, in private equity, it can take a year, 2 years, 3 years to really begin to see the efforts show through from that value creation plan. And that is exactly the case here, that we're seeing those 2017 in particular, but also 2016, 2018 investments begin to show some value appreciation, as well as some liquidity in the case of Vantor and Staples. And then on page 14, again, a slide that we are including in every presentation now, which just gives you a granular idea of the public stock holdings that we have. It's about 6% of our private equity fair value at this point. The biggest position is now SolarWinds, which has traded quite well recently. I will also note that there were two positions that have been on this over the past year or so, Aruhi and Assurance, both of which have been sold down so far this year, which has generated over $17 million in proceeds. And so really our goal with these publics is to reach liquidity. An IPO is a step towards that liquidity. We don't typically control the timing of those exits. They're usually controlled by the general partner who led the investment in question. But for the most part, these have been sold down regularly, as Aruhi and Assurance demonstrate, and we hope that the $65 million you see here will be the source of future liquidity in a similar way. On page 15, onto the income investments, again, as we've mentioned in previous calls, we have been less focused on the income asset class over recent years. The level of this portfolio has declined and that has been through realizations. And so far this year, Standard Aero and Avantor were about $34 million, two of our three biggest positions in the income portfolio. Those have both been now fully repaid to us, which means the total portfolio is now $104 million in size across 23 investments. You'll see the statistics on the left of the page that show you once again, that these companies in which the debt is invested are performing well, very high-quality assets, continue to produce a good level of yield for the size of the portfolio. But the portfolio is shrinking in size. That is something that we do constantly look at. But at this point, we feel that equity is a more attractive place for us to be investing. both really from a top-down as well as a bottoms-up perspective in terms of what we're seeing on our platform. And with that, I will hand back to Peter, who's going to talk about the dividends and capital position, our performance, and then wrap up, and we'll take questions and answers.
Great. Thanks, Paul. So as Paul said, on page 16, you can see our dividends are strongly covered by our cash distributions and yield from our income portfolio. Putting some numbers around that, in 2018, we had $4.73 per share of realization activity in the portfolio. We had $2.27 per share of distribution so far year to date, and 16 cents of yield from our income portfolio. Think of those as the sources we have for paying dividend, and our dividend payments over the last 12 months is 56 cents a share. So very strong liquidity and ability to pay the dividend. In terms of capital position, we have $147.9 million of cash in available credit line, and we have $79.9 million of adjusted unfunded commitments, and so 185% adjusted commitment coverage ratio. And our strategy of pursuing direct investments predominantly and investing directly into equity investments directly from the MVP balance sheet, and doing relatively little of that through funds just puts us in a very good position overall in terms of capital position, and I think reduces the capital risk of our vehicle fairly substantially. Turning to page 17, you can see our historical performance on a NAV and share price total returns over time. Won't go through all the numbers, but as you can see on both a dollar and a sterling basis, solid performance in both net asset value and share price in a 1, 3, 5, and 10-year basis. On page 18, you can see a graph of our discount to NAV over time, as well as some of our key corporate actions. It's also worth noting that in 2019, we did repurchase over 1.5 million shares at a weighted average discount of a bit north of 20%. So in summary on page 19, some of our key figures for 2019 year-to-date. Our year-to-date total return has been 4.8% for our NAV, driven predominantly, as Paul mentioned, by our 2016 to 18 vintage direct equity investments. We had strong exit activity with a 2.3 times multiple on three direct equity investments that we've realized this year, and $107 million of total realizations so far this year. We have so far this year returned $21.2 million to shareholders via buybacks and additional $13.6 million in dividends. We'd also just flag that we expect our next dividend payment to occur in August of this year. And as Paul mentioned, NBPE is highly fee efficient. We are investing directly into private equity-backed companies, with typically a single layer of fees, the MBPE layer, and those are at fee rates that are materially lower than are typically found in the private equity industry, and by our calculations, materially lower than any of the other London-listed closed-end private equity vehicles. So with that, I'd like to open it up to any questions that anyone may have.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to remind everyone, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad at this time. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Ernest Kamek with Quilter.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you very much for your time. My question is, I guess there's two parts here. One is, a little bit about the market valuations and leverage, specifically within the private equity market. Your views on that would be interesting. And then also whether you are seeing any effects from trade tariffs on your U.S. companies in terms of inflation, cost inflation, or perhaps corporate spending activity that's been put on hold or investment and capex being put on hold as a result of the uncertainty?
Sure, I'll take first crack at that, and then Paul can add to that as well. So, valuation levels across private equity and, frankly, across all asset classes remain high. You've seen the numbers, and it's interesting, right? Because you've seen some of the information that we've shown from market data, but private equity valuation levels, are elevated on an absolute basis versus compared to traditional private equity valuations. However, they continue to be a meaningful discount to U.S. public equity valuations, right? So you have this interesting situation where private equity valuations are high relative to historical private equity, but still lower and a bigger discount than you would typically see to public equity valuations. So now, what does that mean, though, for us? What that means then is we just have to be disciplined, right? And so the key for us, and that's the beauty of our business model. Our business model is we don't have to buy the market, right? We can be highly, highly selective. So across our platform, we are doing well less than 15% of the deals that we see, and the deals we're seeing are being done by great private equity firms, right? And so we're turning down a vast majority of the deals that we're seeing out there in the marketplace. So it's our job to go and look, to navigate that sort of environment and we're doing that by being highly selective. In terms of the leverage levels, remain elevated, but also, by the way, in terms of both valuation levels and leverage levels, they're high, but they've been at fairly close to today, for the last few years, right? So this is not unique to now. This has actually been going on for a few years now. The leverage levels in the industry are high, but it's very similar also to the what I said about valuations, right? In that some companies you have to be cautious in the leverage that you're putting on businesses, but you can't just take a one size fits all approach to capital structures. Some companies have the ability to withstand to be able to support higher degrees of leverage. Others just cannot, and so it's our job. And we do a lot of downside analysis. So when we're looking to do a deal, we do a lot of cycle cases and a lot of downside cases of if the economy or the particular industry a company's operating in goes into recession or has a downturn shortly after we buy the company. Obviously, that's never a good thing if that happens, but is the capital structure sustainable? What's interesting right now, and we're sort of an unprecedented period that's never been tested through a cycle before, and that over 80% of the levered loans being issued today are covenant light. And then covenant light is a key factor, right? Because if we're the equity owner, if we're invested in the equity, the idea that the debt is covenant light is very important because that means that the company has the ability to withstand a greater ability to withstand a downturn. And so we're doing a lot of, and we're turning and both valuations and leverage levels, those are typically the key reasons why we're turning down deals. By and large, there are very good companies for sale today, but the number one reason we're turning down businesses is not typically because they're not good businesses. It's because the price is too high and/or the leverage is too high, right? And that's why we have to be very selective, as Paul mentioned. On the trade issues, it is sort of one of the key topics I'll say geopolitical risk more broadly defined, and with trade as a subset of that, is one of the key factors. We are not seeing specific actions systematically across the portfolio where that's negatively affecting revenues or investment decisions. Having said that, though, and by investment decisions, I mean, capital spending, for example, by underlying portfolio companies. What we are seeing, though, is that affecting what sectors or companies private equity managers are looking at. So there are some businesses that private equity managers have just walked away from because they had some of these broader concerns for doing of new deals. What we try to do, though, and even some of the things we've looked at that are more related to capital spending when we've been looking at deals, we've been trying to not just have it be something that just cycles typically with a business case. What we're looking for is something where there's a strong secular trend supporting a particular move towards the type of capital expenditure that would be the case even if we were to have a business cycle or something like trade issues kicking in. We're very much looking for the strong secular trends on those sorts of businesses, not just cycle cases. So sorry, a lot great questions, really important ones. Now I'm trying to give you the relatively quick answer on those, but Paul, anything you want to add to any of those?
I'd say the only thing I'd add is for the second question. If you look at our portfolio, then we are currently most weighted to technology, healthcare, business services, for example, which are all areas that you would expect to hopefully see less impact. So I think that's been helpful, as well as the fact that the portfolio generally is positioned as a mid-market portfolio. So again, not to say that mid-market companies don't have a reasonable proportion of international sales and costs potentially, but very often they do have less exposure than larger multinational companies. So I think those two factors are helpful in us having seen, I would say, at least what I've seen, very few instances where there have been any kind of meaningful impact on portfolio companies by those issues to date.
But it is a key issue and a key area we're focused on, so we're concerned about those issues as well, and it is something we're very much keeping a very close eye on.
Your next question is from Louis Margolis with Select Advisors.
Hello. I've been on these calls for 10 years and have been critical many times. I think the only people to be critical of now are the buyers. The stock is just ridiculously cheap. And you guys have done everything possible, performance, changing, buying your own. Well done. Congratulations. We'll see how things work out over the next year. Well done.
Thank you very much, Lou. Really appreciate it and appreciate your long-term support. Thank you.
Again, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question is from Ian Scroller with Stifel.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if you just talk a bit about the May NEV. I mean, the Avantor IPO, I think, came through during the month. But I think in the release last week, it was saying there was a bit of an impact from quoted investments. I mean, was that sort of one specific company, or what were the factors behind that move?
For what type of investment, sorry, Ian? I didn't quite catch that.
Well, I think the question is just on the May NEV that came out at the end of last week, which I think, you know, I was slightly surprised that the NEV was down over the month, because there was the Avantor IPO came through. But the NEV was down, but I think looking at the announcement, it was sort of saying that some of the quoted investments had fallen back a bit.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if you could just give us a bit more color on that.
Yeah. I think that's – go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Paul, you answer. I was just going to, Ian, refer you to page 14 just so we have the numbers in front of us. Yeah, Paul, you want to take it?
Yeah, no, I mean, basically, of course, it was a very small decline that we did see, but there were a couple of public positions that during May didn't perform as well. So on page 14, if you look at all the numbers, for example, Extraction, this is year to date, not necessarily month to date. We haven't broken this out by month to date, but Extraction has unfortunately been very volatile and obviously down significantly on the year. And I think that was one of the causes during May. Of course, 6.4 million of unrealized losses during May, most of which was from that public position. And of course, May is one of those month ends where you don't really tend to get increases across the private positions. So you're typically holding those private positions still at March 31st. And so a small swing in the publics will, of course, have an impact, positive or negative. In this case, there were just two positions, I think, that were significantly or notably down during the month, whereas others, as you noted, Ian, did continue to perform well. So I don't think there's anything at all to read into that. I think it's a couple of company-specific issues on a small scale that because not much else moved. And, of course, you're also seeing less income coming through from the income portfolio now that it's as small as it is. Means that public positions on month ends like April or May can have more of an impact, and I think that's all it is, really.
Okay, that's great. That makes sense. Yeah, without the uncorrected valuation, and yeah, if you get one or two big things on the other side, it's going to make a bit of an impact. Okay, thank you.
Your next question is from Nathan Ganter with Private Investor.
Thank you. I had two questions. The first is, in this environment of high prices, as you described being your biggest impediment versus investing, what are you underwriting your investments to? What kind of a return?
Great. Should I take that straight away then? Or did you want to ask another question as well?
The other question was, what valuation did you pay for Uber when you invested in?
Okay, great. I'll take the first one there, and Paul will talk about Uber. Great. So in terms of where are we underwriting things to, where we underwrite things to is based upon the risk of the given transaction, right? So we don't just have one number. We look overall between, we risk adjust that, not on a mathematical basis, but more sort of based on the qualitative aspect of those, right? So, for example, if we were doing something in an emerging market, we'd obviously underwrite something to a much higher rate of return than if it was a very, steady, solid, U.S. buyout transaction, for example. But with that sort of caveat, what we are looking for, is between, from an IRR basis on equity investment, typically between sort of a high teens to a 20s, IRR on an equity deal. We've been able to do that generally over time. So, that's on the return for a typical equity deal. Obviously, we've also done some of these interesting pick preferred securities, which we think are materially lower risk, given where the quality of businesses and where they sit in the capital structure. And those are typically being generating returns, and we think very, very excellent risk-adjusted returns, but those are typically generating kind of a PIK return of sort of, let's say, 12.5-ish%, but you also get OID, you get takeout premia if those get taken out early. So oftentimes, while the PIK might say it's 12.5 on its face, and being very, we think, low risk, they could generate returns that are more in the high teens if, the right set of facts comes about. So that's on the return profile. And Paul, do you want to discuss Uber quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have not disclosed the valuation we invested in, and it's a fair question because there were a number of different financials around Uber last year. The investment we came into was in July, so not even a year ago. We are positive on the investment, so we have a positive investment multiple. The IRR would currently look better because of the short time, but we have not given that valuation in our previous disclosures. So I probably can't tell you that now, but as I say, it is the valuation we came in at is below where the stock is trading now.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Your next question is a follow-up from Ian Scroller with Stifel.
Hi, guys. Sorry, it's not actually a question. Just sort of some very bad feedback on the line. I don't know whether the operator can maybe clear that.
Yeah, I think that might have been coming from the last speaker. Is it still on? Are you still getting that, Ian, or is it cleared up?
No, it's a lot better now. Thank you.
Okay, great.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Well, great. Well, thank you, everyone. We very much appreciate the conversation this morning. And as always, Paul and I are available anytime, and also as are Telma and William from the board. So thank you, everyone, and have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.